You remember how to do this?
I think so.
Do I need to put you through some training? It's been a hot minute since you've been on the air.
You're supposed to start off by saying, welcome back.
No. Welcome back. I want to start off with, where the hell you been? I missed you.
I missed you, but we back.
It is. It was pathetic me recording little bits in the loneliness of my office at home. I kept looking up and then just seeing my reflection in the monitor, and I was like,
"It wasn't the same."
It was not the same. I couldn't play off myself. You know, I'm just not that good.
I'm back. Let's go.
Welcome to episode 34 of Black, White, and Blue in the South, a podcast discussing Democratic politics with a Southern flair. I'm Bill Kimmler.
I'm Jamil Brooks.
And that's the real Jamil Brooks. not a fake recording from a past episode. She is live and in person.
I'm back.
We're coming to you from Greenwood, South Carolina, a little red county in a very red state. If you like what you hear, please leave a rating and a review. Tell your friends about us. Follow us on social media, or better yet, somebody publish a version of the English dictionary that has only one word in it, infringed. Because there is a very vocal segment of our society that believes that is the only word that matters in all the English language. Mm. You see, while you were vacationing from our podcast, Jamil, sipping Mai Tais and Bahama Mamas on your back porch all day, I was out there making political content.
Uh-huh.
And here's one that generated a lot of blowback.
Ooh.
Let's turn to the TV.
Yeah.
I want to demonstrate what lawmaking is like in South Carolina with two pictures. This first picture is Governor McMaster signing into law with great celebration and fanfare a bill that enforces safety training. Here's another picture of Governor McMaster signing a bill into law with great fanfare that eliminates a requirement for safety training. In the first picture, they mandated a safety training course for all boaters in South Carolina. The second picture eliminated safety training requirements to carry guns. I don't know about you, but when I'm walking around, I'm more concerned about somebody shooting me with a gun than being hit by a boat.
That's right. I agree. So what's the blowback? What's the comments?
The blowback. Yes, that was not received well by a very vocal group online.
Stop.
So across Instagram, across Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, I got blowback.
No.
Many of the comments that I got came from constitutional scholars all over the country. Who knew we had so many? They focused on the word infringed. One wrote, quote, "The right shall not be infringed." Quote, "The second bill protects a right that shouldn't have been infringed. The first bill adds a requirement to a privilege." You see, I'm getting lectured. I'm getting tutored here. Third quote, "Ah, yes, I forgot about the 97th Amendment to the Constitution. Fishing and wakeboarding being necessary for the mental health of people, the right of the people to drive a boat shall not be infringed."
Mm.
That was sarcasm.
Yeah, that's what he tried.
Another quote, "Shall not be infringed," all in caps. "If you're so worried about being shot, I'd carry. It'd cure that beta energy you're suffering from."
Okay.
Beta energy. And that actually is another theme. So half of them were constitutional scholars. The other half made comments about my manhood.
Oh, my goodness.
Quote, "WTF, how pathetic is this? Scared of people with guns."
That's not what we're scared of, lunatic.
We're scared of lunatics with guns, but scared of people with guns.
People with guns is not the problem.
Quote, "Then stay home, Bill." No.
That's not happening.
Quote, "Discuss this with your wife's boyfriend, then get back to us." Quote, "Life's tough. Stay inside if you want to be a pansy." This is the people that we are working to help represent. You know what? You just got to love the intelligent political discourse that social media gives us.
Yeah.
First, I am not scared to be outside. That's not what I said.
Well, that's not the message that you send.
No.
What you're dealing with in those type situations is the stuff that really make me roll my eyes. It's like, there it is. That's it. No one, why when you say that there should be some type regulations as it relates to gun control, do they automatically come for your manhood?
Yeah. So I don't live in a constant worry of being shot. That's not what I said. I am out there, I am more worried about being shot than being hit by a boat. A boat ain't going to attack me on Main Street.
Yeah.
Right.
And how is adding an additional level of training to carrying a weapon infringement?
And that's a good point. You see, there are millions of people in this country who live in neighborhoods who are scared of being shot because they can hear the gun violence outside their door on a daily basis. And there are families in safe communities who are already traumatized by mass shootings, either at schools or concerts or churches, at grocery stores, and they're going to go to their graves living in fear. So don't diminish what they've been through.
Exactly.
And yes, you should be more concerned about gun violence, I think, than you would be with boating accidents. And like you said, I don't think it's unreasonable that mandated basic safety training that goes a long way towards responsible ownership, that it does not in any way diminish your right to bear arms. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Second, the Constitution, this is for all the constitutional scholars out there, the Constitution is a living, breathing document.
Say it.
It is interpreted and understood and reevaluated constantly.
Yeah.
Like here in South Carolina. A year ago, we had a Supreme Court that looked at South Carolina's constitution, where it's explicitly stated there's a right to privacy, and said that because of that, it was going to strike down a draconian law that limited reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm.
A year later, after they switched out a Supreme Court member, they looked at that same law and said, now we're good.
Yeah.
Did the Constitution change?
It did not.
No. And same thing in our U.S. Supreme Court with Roe v. Wade and all the other things that have been found within constitutional rights are now not within constitutional rights. And I'll tell you what, 30 years from now, they'll be back. So the Constitution changes based upon who's in power.
Yeah.
Not the words, but the interpretation. So these self-appointed scholars out there commenting on my post with their witty insights or questioning my masculinity, you know that they've never read the Constitution, the basic Constitution to begin
with.
They
never read it.
And then they get to the Bill of Rights and they've never gotten past the Second Amendment, right? They've never gotten past the Second Amendment to read the other 19. They completely ignore the fact that every day your right, as you understand it to be, completely, this is how they feel it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
They feel the Second Amendment means that there should be zero laws on the books, that your right should be completely unfettered with zero barriers to owning weapons. Otherwise, it's being infringed upon. Well,
let's
talk about today's state of affairs and, you know, people who are supportive of this constitutional carry law.
Yeah.
You can't own bazookas, cannons, other destructive weapons without registering it.
Correct.
With the ATF, go through background checks, go through the IRS, et cetera. Your rights infringed.
Yeah.
You can't take firearms on board with you on a commercial airline.
Mm-hmm.
Test that Second Amendment infringement
theory.
See how
that goes for you.
At the airport. and give me a holler because I want to be there to film it. Okay. Let's test that theory about infringement. And that South Carolina law, the constitutional carry law that eliminated the safety training, yay, it's now infringed. Well, guess what? You still can't carry on state house grounds. It's in that law. Visitors to the governor's mansion are also prohibited from carrying a firearm or dangerous weapon onto the grounds. So what's up? You hear anybody complaining about that?
Oh.
Where's their passion for shall not be infringed?
They're going to protect the governor in the office with people carrying guns, but everybody else is at fair game, huh?
Governor signed that law with all great
smiles.
Make
sure you don't come in here ticked off.
Exactly.
With a weapon. But for all my other citizens, you can just be out and about and somebody else can run up on you ticked off.
Yep. This is a law for thee, but not for me.
Hey, that's it.
Let us know what you think by dropping us a note at blackwhiteblueinthesouth@gmail.com. Send us your comments, questions, topic ideas. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, and Mastodon. We share video clips of our episodes, especially Jamil's ever-changing hairstyles, and links to our news articles that will make you more informed. So check that out.
That's right.
Hey, Jamil.
Hi, Bill.
Tell me about what's kept you out of Black, White, and Blue studios these past 2 weeks. What's been going on in your world?
So a long injury finally caught me, and I had to have knee surgery. So after that, we've been out what I call the sick and shut-in list, where I was not mobile for a little while, but I'm out now.
Yeah, you're not moving around fast, but you're moving.
Yeah, I'm moving slowly.
Now, was it just the one knee, or you got both to look at?
Right now, it's just the one. Okay. But in the near future, it will most likely be the two.
And I remember talking to you, and your fantasy was before you were going into surgery that you'd be back up to full strength in, what, 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks recovery, and you're out there running marathons. What's the reality been like?
I don't know what I was thinking, because that's not it. So it's a struggle. One of the things that just amazes me about the body is how it knows what it's supposed to do. But if you shock it or it goes through a form of trauma, you have to remind it of what it's supposed to do. And so for me, the hardest struggle was realizing that though I know my knee is supposed to bend, my quad muscle must have forgotten, because it wasn't responding in the beginning. So going through PT, they were training me to get it to lift. And so now the hurdle is getting it to bend. And most people know it as that range of motion.
So this surgery recovery is not just about rest and putting your leg up. You have to go through PT as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you've got to bend it. So I'm 2 weeks post-op. And this knee has got to bend. And I know they tell me, relax, you'll get it, but I really want to
bend. Well, it's good to see you back and independent. I'm sure you were dying not being able to get in the car and go where you want to go.
I know.
And now you are. In fact, when I first saw you, you had the crutch and you were hobbling really slow. Now you're just hobbling.
So I'm just hobbling. The crutch is
down. That's a step
in
the right direction.
Yeah, we got it.
Well, I had a ton of fun putting together the pair of best of episodes these past couple of weeks.
I heard those, Bill.
And we even got to publish. Yeah, you not being here means I get to make fun of you all I want. So it's a totally one-sided episode. That was great. But we even got to publish two news clips that have been sitting in our vault since September. So they got released.
Yeah.
But now our vault is empty. We've got nothing in the bank.
Uh-oh.
It is time to replenish.
Let's do it.
Also, time for a social media update.
Okay.
We are on 7 different social media platforms. Yeah. I rattled them off at the beginning. So out of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, YouTube, and Mastodon, when we last spoke, Threads was our number one social media platform.
Okay.
We had the most followers on Threads, and it was a brand new platform at the time.
That's interesting. Okay.
But it's been overtaken by another platform. So we are more popular on one of those 7 than we are on Threads. You want to take a guess where we have our most followers now?
I'm going to lean and say YouTube, because they maybe get to watch the videos.
Yeah, we put videos up daily, but we do that across all the platforms, so it's kind of an even playing field. We shuffle them up, but every platform gets videos.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think we probably pull in an older crowd, so I think they're safer on YouTube.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, no.
What?
No. It turns out we are strikingly more popular on TikTok.
What?
I know. Just in the last week, we've jumped over 100 more followers.
Oh, wow.
In the last week or two. So we are totally getting a lot more popular in TikTok. We're getting a lot more activity. We've got some videos with tens of thousands of views already.
Oh, cool.
Hundreds of comments.
Oh.
I can't predict what gets popular or not. It is completely random. But if you want to see what we do every day, a new video gets put out there that you can watch us do our thing, and we intersperse it with clips and special effects and
all sorts of good
stuff. If we get to 10,000 followers,
yeah.
Do you know what we get to do?
What?
We get to go live on TikTok,
which taps
you into a whole new world and a whole new audience.
We want that.
So we want to get to 10,000. If you are on TikTok, follow us at Black, White, and Blue in the South and share our videos, comment, help that algorithm push us forward. The TikTok algorithm is funny. It's only good for like an hour.
Oh, wow.
Like if I publish a video, we'll get most of our viewers within that hour, and then it'll disappear and go off into the netherworld.
Mm.
If it gets popular and it starts getting reshared and commented on, then that curve lasts a lot longer. It can go days or even weeks.
Yeah.
So we need that interaction. Please hop on to that TikTok before they ban it.
Please.
I think it's a conspiracy. I think the U.S. Congress and Senate are going after TikTok because we are just starting to get popular
on
there.
You think that's it?
I have to imagine the two
are
connected.
Fired up! Ready to go!
Fired up!
Ready to go!
Ready to go!
Fired up!
Ready to go!
Well, we haven't mentioned it in quite a while, but both Jamil and I are running for office here in South Carolina. I'm running for State House in District 13.
I'm running for State House in District 12.
And we like to keep you updated as to how our campaigns are progressing. When we last talked live, we recorded on the day that Jamil filed for office, and we went through that. Since then, I have filed.
You did. Yeah,
so now you and I are officially names on the ballot. Neither of us are being primaried, so that means our names go directly to the end game.
Is that not exciting?
And we will be on the ballot in November.
Yes.
What I think is sad, though, is that there are still too many officials who put their name down on the ballot, and they've already won. They've already won. They paid their filing fee, and they've got no opposition in the primary. They've got no opposition in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, democracy does not function that way. And none of them, not a one of them, Democrat or Republican, are so dang blang popular that they deserve to not be challenged.
I agree.
So the fact that in those areas where nobody stood up and said, you know what, I'm going to challenge the status quo, we just gave up our democracy. But there are certain pockets in this world or in the state where I have seen a lot of first timers step up to the plate. Those who are maybe active on social media or feel passionate. But they said, you know what, I'm going to take a chance.
Yeah.
And I applaud you for doing so, and thank you for joining the club.
Mm-hmm. We know it's scary, but it just has to be done. I had this conversation with someone, and I said that if you've been a citizen and you've been watching how things have been going in the state, in the Senate, if you look at on the national level and it's not what you want, the only way you can change that is to figure out how you get into that momentum. Do you put your name on the ballot and run? Or do you join a campaign team of someone else who is running and support them? Or do you make a donation to their campaign? Do you share their post? You've got to figure out what it is that you need to do to be a part of it. No one that runs will change the world by themselves, but together we can all make a positive impact.
Oh, beautiful. I'm going to have some patriotic music in the background playing when you give that. So if you hear that music in the background, that was done in post-editing, but I almost stood up and saluted.
Stop it.
Put my hand over my heart, shed a tear, waved a flag, had a bald eagle fly in the room and some U.S. jets fly overhead. That was awesome.
Oh, goodness.
You are inspirational.
Oh, thank you.
You and I have been working the media platforms. You recently were on a radio show. Tell me what that experience was like.
That was really cool. It was different.
Let's talk about where it was and who it was with.
Well, first, we don't know where it was. We're still driving out here somewhere.
So what she's referring to is that the host of the show gave us directions that I swear to you, we might have just been, you know, Hansel and Gretel in the forest dropping breadcrumbs trying to find our way through the forest because it made no sense. You know, turn left at the moose, you know, find the old tree.
And if you look up now, you'll see the blue jay that is jumping from one tree to the next. I was complete. And I don't know if it was me being so close to being post-op because I wasn't even at 2 weeks then. Right. And I looked at my poor husband and I said, does this make sense to you? And he was like, no.
And what did I tell you to do?
You told me to put it in Google.
Exactly, because I had just been there myself.
Yes.
Google took me there just fine.
Oh, my goodness. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is ridiculous. So we got there like 14 minutes after airtime. But we got there, and then the torture began.
And actually, I would like to play a clip from that now, which I thought was a good clip. So I didn't take an odd clip. I took a good clip for me. So let's listen to Jamil on WZLA 92.9 FM talking with Brother Bill Robinson.
Yay, Bill.
I'm taking this is your campaign slogan, bridging the gap.
That's what we're doing, yes.
All right, well, tell us, our audience and yours truly, about that.
Okay, so one of the things that I've had the opportunity to learn working on both the education and the healthcare side is that in most policies and procedures, there's always this gap. So that's why I got the doctorate in policies and advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to be able to do and where my passion lies is looking at the policies to identify the gaps where there's a group of people or a particular population that gets overlooked or trapped. And I want to develop policies that will help bridge that gap. So, for instance, if you have a family and the mom has used, we'll do TANF or EBT benefits, right, to help provide for the family. Mom goes through training classes, does some really good support programs, is ready to go, acquires a new job that is making some money, an increase in what they may have been making before. And then all of a sudden, the benefits are coming, they get the new job, and then there's a grace period and the benefits are cut. But is that enough time for that mom to really get acclimated to the increase in the income, know how to budget, and then be released from it? And a lot of times you will find people get what we consider trapped inside of systems because of the gaps. So what I want to work to do is call out the gaps, yes, because we all see them. It's a part of the cycle of life. Mm-hmm. So we want to start to say, this is a gap, and here are some of the remedies to help us with those gaps.
And that was a message that you've given a number of times here on this podcast. And it was great to see it evolve, and now it's just second nature, and you're reaching out to the radio audience.
I had a conversation with someone close to me who listened to the interview, and they said, in a joking manner, what are you saying about coming for the TANF benefits? And this was a really good conversation. They were like, now leave them alone. And I said, no, we are leaving them alone because those benefits are very beneficial to the recipients. But what I want to do is work to add a sense of foundation or a sense of comfort to the recipients of that particular benefit so that once they're in a position to transition from it, they no longer have to look back and feel like that's their safety net. So for everyone who's listening, I'm not saying rip benefits away, or I'm not saying there's not any support. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying let's evolve the support. Let's build it broader so that when individuals are done with it, we've set individuals up on a path to success, not one that will cause them later to return because they've hit one roadblock or they've run into a wall. We want to make this a state where individuals have the platform to grow. So I was glad that she listened and she said, hey, what do you think about this? And we had a really good conversation about how that system works and what parents experience coming onto the system, getting into that cycle where they're stuck and they're back again to fill out another application because of something else that has happened. So
you have to think that this is a bipartisan deal, because even if you're on the fiscally conservative side, you don't want people returning.
You don't. You want to prepare society.
You want people to be productive, to contributing, thrive, to pay taxes, put into the system.
You would want that if you're comfortable with progression. But if you are an individual who has a fear of progression and what could become of you as an individual, then you might be okay with a certain pocket of people staying where they are.
I was on a show just last week as well.
Yeah.
We call it our parent podcast.
They are.
The All About Nothing podcast, the ones who are responsible for getting Jamil and I started on this.
Yeah.
Run by Barrett Gruber and his co-host, Zach King. They called me Wednesday afternoon.
Cool.
And says, can you be on the air tonight?
And you said.
I said, well, I have no life, so let's do it. So I hopped on with them remotely. And this was maybe an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I heard the preview of the episode. They got it down to I think an hour 30.
Okay.
But it still was a very long episode that went by fast.
Okay.
We went from topic to topic to topic. We talked Cowboys and Eagles. We talked Israel and Palestine.
Oh, wow.
We talked about trials. And we talked about O.J. Simpson. We talked about my campaign. We went all over the map.
Oh, that's going to be good, though.
So it was fun. And it just naturally evolved. I'll play a short clip, about 3 minutes.
Okay.
Let me share another thing with you, because I'm coming into my campaign running for state house with two top issues. And one of them is in the medical area, and that has to do with medical debt. Because I have been hearing, as I've been talking to people and experiencing myself, South Carolinians are impacted by medical debt worse than just about any other state in the country.
Yeah.
Easily. It is a fact that we are second in the nation for medical debt that's gone into collections, not just in the medical debt you have. It's gotten so bad, you now have collection agencies after you. We're second worst in the nation. And how do we make it worse? Well, we've allowed the government to become a collection agency for hospitals. If you are overdue on your bills or you've had so much debt you can't pay it off, what's the government do to your tax refunds?
Take it out of your state tax refund.
Garnished, right? You were looking forward to your $600, $500 to make your rent payment. Nope, it took it away. Yeah. Now, there is no reason why hospitals are allowed to have the state government be their collection agency.
Right.
But if you're late on a car payment or a house payment or a credit card payment, the government doesn't come in and take your money, right? Nope. They got to go through it the old-fashioned way. So why do hospitals get to use the services of the government for collections? And it's not like the billing for these services are all that accurate. I'll tell you a personal story. 2 years ago, and I think I shared this with you before, I donated a kidney.
Right.
And part of that means the donor incurs no bills whatsoever. 100% free. Every test, the hospital say, the surgery, everything to encourage donors, no charge at all. So I had some tests done here at the local hospital that were required. I had to get a chest x-ray and something else. And they got the lab work. The lab clearly says, according to federal law, blah, 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 do not bill the patient. Send all paperwork to the organ transplant center. Well, guess what I get in the mail 3 months later?
A bill?
A several thousand dollar bill for these tests where the order clearly said, do not bill the patient. So I contacted them. I sent them a copy of the lab order again saying, look, you were not supposed to charge me. A month later, guess what I get in the mail? An overdue notice.
Yeah.
An overdue notice. You are now 30 days late in payment. Please pay. I go, guys, this is, and then this happened one more time. I got one more overdue notice. And then I went ballistic, right? And I threatened a lawsuit saying you guys are breaking the law by sending me these bills. Yeah. And they got it taken care of. You know, I finally found the right person who cleared it out. Now, fortunately for me, that happened during the summer. So I had no penalty. But what happens if that was during tax season?
Oh, yeah.
They could have garnished my tax refund to pay for billing errors that I had nothing to do with. And you know how hard it is to get that fixed after the fact?
Oh, do
you know impossible. How many hoops you have to jump through?
Mm, yeah.
So anyhow, as a legislator, there are things we can do to address this. Number one, get the government out of garnishment.
Yeah.
They should not be involved. The only place where they should still be involved is when it comes to child support. I don't want to let that stay, but this whole medical bill stuff, get that out of there.
So that's just a couple minutes of a very long episode covering a lot of topics and a lot of fun. So thank you to Barrett and Zach for allowing me time on your show. I always enjoy it and give you all the props in the world for causing the problem that you caused here between Jamil and I with this podcast of ours. So we thank you.
Thank you.
I also attended a Life on the Lake event here in Greenwood. Lake Greenwood obviously is one of the centerpieces of our county, and it's also adjacent to Lawrence County and Newberry County, South Carolina. And they had a big event for all those residents and businesses who are impacted by lake life.
Okay.
And so it was a couple of hours long, and we got some updates, and I got to network and meet and greet some people and kind of introduce myself, because that lake territory is all my district, down that lake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was important that I'd be there and try to get known and make some names. And it was very nice. I very much enjoyed it. They put on a great event, very informative. There was a gentleman who gave a 30-slide PowerPoint. That's my territory. I love that. That's up my wheelhouse. Yeah. With data, with maps, with charts and graphs talking about, you know, here's the land that we've developed. Here's land you can't develop. Here's the number of populations coming in. Here's the businesses coming in. Here's the money we generate and the revenue we are responsible for. It was very informative.
Wow.
And I just ate that stuff up. So thank you.
Was it a great turnout?
Yeah, well, it was packed. It was over at the Piedmont Tech Center, that Medford Center.
Okay.
So every table was filled.
Okay.
And so it was good, and good food, and good company. So we very much enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Upcoming, Jamil and I have a meet and greet.
We do.
Was that Saturday, May the 4th?
4th.
All right. So if you're not into the Kentucky Derby, like I am, I really don't care about horse racing, but I know it's popular among some, so you're going to have a lot of fun. But if you're not, a great alternative would be to come on out to T.W. Boone's on Main Street in Uptown Greenwood. On the second floor, Jamil and I will be there to share our thoughts and hear your opinions and have some stimulating conversation in a friendly environment.
Yep.
Finally, before we get on to the news, we need to talk about why I look so sun-kissed today. You know, I know Jamil has quite often said on this show that she's a black woman, but if you were to see us side by side, you would think we both belong to the community.
You do.
I have got, now I'm usually white as a ghost. I scare people.
Not today.
But we were in the sun, Jamil and I, all day yesterday. Talk about where we were and what we were doing.
Yeah. So we had the annual Floyd Nicholson's Fish Fry, which was great, by the way. But it takes a lot of planning behind the scenes. And then you go live for that short time span and you're moving like a whole bunch of little ants. And that's what we did. We moved from early that morning. I think, what, you got there 7:30, 8 o'clock?
This was the annual fundraiser for the Greenwood County Democratic Party. And you are correct. We opened up at 8. The first plates were served at 11.
Yeah.
A half dozen dozen to a dozen tents went up, tables and chairs and equipment.
Organizing.
And get the ticket people going, get the food line people going, get the fish fry people going.
And then the fun part is the networking part. So after all of that, then we were floating about answering questions and talking, which was cool.
Speaking of answering questions and talking, you got pulled aside for almost an hour.
I did. He asked questions. I had answers.
We had a reporter from the Post and Courier swing by. He's doing a tour of the upstate for some lengthy piece that he's going to have come out, I think in a couple of weeks, he said. But he wanted to talk to locals and representatives and so on, and he had a full hour conversation with Dr. Brooks.
Was it an hour?
It seemed like it because you were out of commission that long. I'm like, where's Jamil? Where's Jamil? And every time I look up, you're just still chatting
she's
with
still
this
talking.
Guy.
Yeah.
I go, look, she's a great lady, but she's not that interesting. Let's move on.
Yes, she is.
What kind of questions was he asking?
Really good questions about the demographics. How does it feel to be, and the question that I think I walked away with was, how does it feel to be a Democrat running right now? And I went, it feels great. Like, I think this is the time. We always are saying democracy, and we are a group of people who truly believe in the rights and the considerations of others. We are a group of people who respect differences. So I think this is the perfect time for us to say that we're a Democrat.
Amen.
And so we had that conversation along with other things. He asked about local races and those type things. But the focal point was what, I guess if we wanted to sum it up, is what do we anticipate come June 11th, come November the 5th? And I will say what I said to him, being this close to the ballot or the process of being on a ballot, knowing what's going to come out on a ballot, right? One of the things I can say that really makes me proud at this point is that across the state, I can tell you that the individuals that are running on the Democratic ticket are not just people who woke up one day and said, I think I'm bored. You know, these aren't people that we just wanted a placeholder to go into place. These are people that are coming to say now is the time to make a change that has years of experience. They've got great expertise. They have a passion for people. I mean, the candidates that I am running into are candidates that will be great candidates regardless of which of their names make it on that ballot in November. And I said to him, this is the best place for Democrats to be right now. So many qualified candidates are having the primary and some not. But we know that when we get to November the 5th, those ballots are going to look real good.
Good. That's great. The highlight for me of the whole thing was that I lost 8 pounds. In one day.
Because you sweated it off.
I'm telling you. And I actually weighed myself before and after.
No way.
I weighed myself this morning and I could not believe I have lost 8 pounds yesterday. It was 85 degrees, a light breeze.
Light.
Sun beaming down on you the whole time. So yeah. I am burnt to a crisp.
Yeah, you missed the highlight, which was the dance-off that was about to occur. So we're going to add that to next year's fish fry.
A dance-off?
A dance competition between my mom and the one and only Miss Abbeville.
Oh my goodness.
So get ready for that.
We had a silent auction as well, where certain gifts were donated by community and local businesses. And there was a bidding war on a smart television that went on between, was it your aunt?
Yes.
And the chair of the Abbeville Democrats.
Yes.
And, you know, a silent auction is supposed to be silent. These two ladies had, you know, hands in each other's hair and beating each other up and fighting over this TV. But in the end, Ms. Brenda from Abbeville won the television, and we are so grateful for the donations, and we are grateful for the 25 volunteers that helped put that together.
Wow.
And then we had, by ticket count, I think about 320 plates sold.
Good job.
So we broke records for a fundraiser for our Democratic Party, and like you said, the best part of it, all joking aside, was talking with the people.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing that I walked away with was that I counted a number of young families.
Oh yeah,
that showed up.
Did you? It's sweet babies.
Just, yes.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
But the fact that the younger folk, and I say younger folk, like I'm an old fuddy, but you know, families in their 20s.
Yeah.
You know, we're coming by and grabbing a plate and talking with candidates and getting involved. And
yeah.
You know, I'm getting old and I'm not going to be this chair much longer. And at some point, you got to hand it over to that generation. So it was good to see them come out.
Yeah, you're right. I agree.
So with that behind us, let us turn our attention to the news.
For up to the minute reports, stay tuned to this station. Now the news.
As a follow-up to episode 29, where we talked about how businesses throughout South Carolina were pressing lawmakers to pass the South Carolina Justice Act. In fact, that was a topic you had brought to the mix on that episode.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to fix a flaw in our legal system in this state that allows people to sue businesses for a full amount of damages without regards to the actual amount of blame that can be attributed to that business. For example, and this is the example we use over and over. Let's say someone has a mimosa at one upscale restaurant early in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Then they go to a seedy dive bar and down 10 shots of whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
When driving home, that person kills someone. So the victim's family wants to sue for damages. And of course, they're entitled to do so. But they know that the seedy bar has no money or worse, no insurance. So they go after the high scale restaurant who gave just that one mimosa earlier in the day for the full amount of damages.
Yeah.
They don't even file a lawsuit against the whiskey bar. That's what our current law allows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just locales that serve alcohol that's concerned. And that's what was eye-opening with that article from episode 29. We're talking about all businesses, whether you're in supply chain or truck driving or gas stations, all businesses are affected by this. And the result is that this has led to skyrocketing insurance rates for businesses. And in many cases, insurers have just left the area altogether, mm-hmm. saying they can't make money here when a business that you're insuring could be sued for full amounts. So now you're down, in some cases, just to one corporation that insures bars and restaurants.
Yep.
So as Nick Reynolds from the Post and Courier wrote recently, the South Carolina lawsuit reform effort died with a whimper in the legislature last week. The Justice Act was proposing something I thought was pretty reasonable.
I thought so too.
Under the proposal, defendants could be made to pay the entirety of damages in a case if they were found to be more than 50% responsible.
Mm-hmm.
If the defendants are found to be less than 50% responsible, they would be responsible only for the relevant dollar amount of damages and costs. But in the Senate, there was a filibuster on April 3rd that lasted for quite a few hours, and this bill didn't move. Then a group of lawmakers moved to invoke cloture. And what cloture means is end debate, let's vote. Well, that motion failed by a 23-20 vote because there are quite a few lawyers there that make quite a bit of money on these lawsuits. So you talk about self-interested voting, there it is.
Yep.
The bill was blacklisted and effectively killed.
Mm-hmm.
So the Save Our Venues group out there, you know, sorry that that happened. This is the same Senate, by the way, that had no problem spending time on making being transgender in South Carolina a crime, holding hearing after hearing. They were able to push that through and make time for that, but they ran out of time for local businesses. So for those of you who are conservative pro-business voters, take a long look at how your lawmakers are prioritizing their time and move past the R and the D and move on to somebody who has those priorities in proper alignment.
Ooh, well done. We're going to move over to another article that came from the U.S. Sun, and it says, home hell. We need to criminalize this. Woman cries as she's still paying bills on a home she's locked out of, and it took a year to get access to it. So in layman's terms, what we have here is squatters took over this young lady's residence. She was still required to pay her bills on that home so that no one else would take it. This was a home that was given to her by her deceased father. And individuals occupied the home, but would not leave the home. And because there is a gap in that particular portion of the law, they were able to stay there in that home. And it took her 11 months to get them out of the home. And so you've seen this probably. There's been conversations about squatters in different states. Florida's governor actually proposed legislation on how to protect the homeowners better than what is happening. And in South Carolina, the article that I'm quoting to you is from a resident that lives in Charleston, South Carolina, or the home was in Charleston, South Carolina. And our South Carolina laws may not be as strong as they need to be to protect homeowners.
When I read this article, I got confused.
Why?
Because we just did an article a couple of episodes back about evictions.
You did.
We did. And how easy it is to evict people who are late on payments and so on. So why is it so tough to get rid of squatters?
So in my mind, just my small mind, I think the difference here is who the squatter is squatting on. I think that if you are a regular individual that has a couple of pieces of property and you own it, and then there's someone that commandeers your homes and just takes it over, they're going to look at you a little different. But if you become an apartment complex, or if you were an organization, I think they handle things differently there. And if you look at what happened in New York with the individual, there's another article you all will be able to
see.
We'll
come to that.
Yeah, but if you look at that, I think that there is, for lack of a better word, I think there's some severe favoritism going on here that is allowing people to do this.
I did a little research on this, and I did find that there's kind of legal reasons why squatters get to stay and evicted tenants get to go.
That adverse possession law?
Something like that.
Yeah,
so basically, when you get into a landlord and tenant situation, there is a contract that's signed, and that contract is very enforceable.
It is.
So if you're late in your payment, you don't get just to sit in your apartment and go, hey, I'm a squatter. You know, nope, the sheriff's at your door and they're hauling your butt out of that apartment.
Yes.
But squatters have not signed any such agreement. They just move right in. So basically, they're trespassing.
Correct.
Yes, they're breaking the law, but you have to prove it in court. Because in a trial situation, innocent until proven guilty, and you got to jump through a lot of hoops in the legal system to make the case, especially if the squatter fights back and says, nope, you know, that's not how I remember it.
Yeah.
Okay, now you've got he said, she said, and the squatter says, all my stuff's here. Look, I'm here. And there's no contract saying otherwise.
Yeah.
So therefore, it now goes through the legal system, which can be a very slow and laborious process.
And the longer the squatter is there, the more probable that they will be able to assume ownership of that house.
Now, I want to talk about that New York case you brought up, because that was hilarious.
Oh, my goodness.
So according to the Associated Press, there is a guy who rented a room at a New York hotel.
Yes, he did.
One night. And by hook and by crook, he was able to stay there for 5 years.
5 years.
Until he messed up. So let's talk about the steps that got him there.
Oh, goodness.
So he lived rent-free in a Manhattan hotel by exploiting an obscure local housing law. This started in a very fancy building built way back in 1930. And in fact, there's laws specifically addressing buildings that were created before 1960. So it fell into this old-time building law. So whatever it is. Anyhow, he and his boyfriend paid $200 to rent one of the rooms, and this building had 1,000 rooms in it, rented one of the rooms for $200. But then they found this law that says any building constructed in the olden days, you are allowed to demand a 6-month lease. I don't understand why that law is, but it is what it is, and it's there. So they claim that since he paid for a night, he counted as a tenant and demanded a 6-month lease. The hotel said, get out of here, kicked him out. So he went to court. He went to court saying, listen, based on this old-timey law that was, you know, got a lot of loopholes in it, I should be allowed to stay here for at least 6 months, or at least demand a lease to allow me to stay. The representation for the hotel didn't show up to court. They didn't show up.
And he got what he wanted.
And he got what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed him to stay up all the way through to July of last year. But then he goofed up.
Then he got crazy.
What did he do?
He had the nerve to upload a fake deed and say, I really do own this.
He tried to charge other tenants rent.
Yes.
And in doing that, uploaded this fake deed, which then was very clearly breaking the law. And then he was arrested.
Then he was arrested. Nothing else. Now, you were able to go 5 years cutting a fool like that, but you upload the fake deed and try to collect monies, and then you're arrested. So I think as a state, we tend to follow other states. And that was so funny because I saw in our last article, Senator Shane Massey said that sometimes we tend to go along every once in a while. We're outliers for South Carolina. So I'm going to apply that here. We tend to follow. Florida has put in some more stringent laws to protect squatters. South Carolina needs to be on the lookout for that. And this is where I would like for our officials to put their energy and attention to. Find the loopholes that harm working individuals and figure out a way to fix it. There's no way that this young lady from Charleston should have still been required to pay on her home for 11 months and someone sit there free. No documentation of them doing anything to pay.
Well, there are things she could have done to handle it. She could have called the squatter hunters.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you heard of them?
I have.
Let's,
that's $5 to $20K for the squatter hunter to show up.
It's effective. Let's hear from the squatter hunter.
Okay.
Can you outsmart a squatter at their own game? A California handyman is helping hundreds of frustrated homeowners retake control of their properties from trespassers who refuse to leave. Flash Shelton wanted to help his mother sell her home after his father passed, but a squatter derailed their plans. Due to California's squatter laws, removing a trespasser can take weeks or months and can cost tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees. Police officers are also rarely able to intervene. So Shelton moved in with the squatter by having his mother rent her home to him as the new leaseholder. After confronting the squatter and installing surveillance cameras, the trespasser was out within a matter of hours. Shelton posted the entire experience on his YouTube channel, which got millions of views. Helping his mom gave Shelton the idea of launching Squatter Hunters, which allows homeowners to hire he and his team. The plan is simple. Live with the squatter. Dirty the bathroom. Take the best spot on the couch. Hog the TV. Blast music. Eat their Cheetos. His business only works with squatters, which is different from a leaseholder or a tenant. Even those who stopped paying rent a long time ago still have rights. A squatter, on the other hand, is somebody who trespasses and stays on the property without permission. And believe it or not, they're innocent until proven guilty. Homeowners can't simply go in and drag them out without exposing themselves to potential lawsuits. Joining me now, the squatter hunter, Flash Shelton. Flash, good to see you. Tell me about the caregiver for the elderly that you had to displace.
She posed as a caregiver and wasn't caregiving. The homeowner, an 88-year-old woman, fired her. The company that she hired her through said, you know, she's fired, but there's nothing we can do. We can't help you get her out of the house. And she's been stuck with her for 2 years.
How'd you get her out?
I caught her climbing in a window. And that's a case that's ongoing. That's a recent case right now. And I'm working with social services. You know, the difficult ones are ones that are, she's barricaded in a bedroom. She, no electricity, no bathroom. She climbs in and out of a bedroom window. Those are difficult.
How about the case in Woodland Hills that the LA Times wrote about?
So in some cases, violent criminals, if a felon, they're not allowed to live, you know, in a house with a firearm. So when I find this out, I basically move into the house, sit down with them with a firearm exposed and say, you know, we can call the police, but I think it'll be a parole violation for you. And that quickly gets them out because if I'm a resident, they can't be.
Is this tied to homelessness?
I don't believe so. In the hundreds of cases I've dealt with, you know, I have not come across it being homeless. I have a heart for homeless. My family was homeless when I was young. And when I do come across homeless, I'll give them services and help relocate them. No, squatters are people, they are just self-entitled, you know, narcissistic people that just don't care how they affect other people.
I still don't get why law enforcement, I don't understand why you're needed. Why can't law enforcement deal with this situation? What are the handcuffs, figurative, that they are facing?
Well, I think the main reason is because the lines are blurred between squatters and tenants. And even though squatter laws and rights were originally adapted in the 1800s, they've kind of just blurred and become, you know, in the same lines. And there needs to be a clear distinction with the law. It needs to be squatters criminal, tenants civil.
So for our listeners, you know, take a couple moments and just read about adverse possession and one of the reasons why you can't just move a person out of your home. But we keep saying trespass, but these individuals aren't just trespassing, they're stealing. That's theft, and theft is punishable by law. So I'm trying to figure out, if you just came into someone else's home, you gained entry for one reason, but that's not why you're there. If we want to talk about that first case that the squatter hunter just talked about, your job is done. How do you stay? At this point, you're stealing. And I thought about it in terms of like businesses. If I am a landlord, like the lady that was in Charleston, and I have several properties and I rent those out, and there's a squatter in there, they are now obstructing my ability to do business. So now they're costing me money. Any other business, the business owner can call the police and say, I have someone who's disrupting business, the flow, my customers are not comfortable, they're not allowing me to conduct sales, please come remove them from my premises. And they get to go.
So question for you, are you in favor of squatter hunter, yay or nay?
I'm in favor of somebody hunter to get these squatters out the way.
All right, this is about the fourth or fifth episode where I have brought up the name of this gentleman. But before I mention who it is, I'm going to read a public statement that he made on Facebook a couple of years ago, just so you know the type of person we're dealing with. Quote,
okay.
This is an elected official in South Carolina. I was born a free man and I am reclaiming my freedom. I don't care if the politicians, unelected bureaucrats, and their sycophants like it or not. I will be prudent and respectful, but keep your hysteria to yourself, your hands off my wallet, your body off my property, and your need for control away from my God-given freedom. I'm tired of lockdowns, curfews, looters, weaponized pandemics, mandatory this and that, government-caused massive unemployment, bad science, worse science, greedy special interest, wasteful public spending, and massive debt. I'm tired of being a second-class citizen to anyone screaming mindless chants that happen to align with the leftists running our bureaucracies or our tax dollar-supported universities that are turning our kids into Marxist revolutionaries. I won't place a chip in my body, carry a health passport, detail my private life to government contact tracer or be forced to take medicines or vaccinations. I will not replace my Christian faith with your warmed over Marxism called social justice theory. I am a free man and I won't kneel before any man save my God. Those were the words of our elected state treasurer, Curtis Loftus, the gentleman behind the $1.8 billion scandal of a fund that has not been reported on, don't know where the money came from, and Curtis Loftus was in a hearing with the Senate Finance Committee for over 8 hours to try to explain himself, and all he did was argue with the Senate Committee and blame other people for his problems. So he got criticism for that post, especially, I won't place a chip in my body. Please. He's talking about the COVID vaccine and the microchips.
Yeah.
This is an elected official statewide in charge of a $50 billion budget talking about microchips in your bloodstream.
I'm wondering, what did they expect from him? If you read that post, you think you're going to be able to sit this person down behind a table and conduct some effective business? He told you who he was with that post. Not releasing details of his private life. He's a free man. He talked about greedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then wastefulness? Sir, you got $1.8 million and you don't
know. No. Rewind.
How much?
$1.8.
Oh, Bill said billion. Oh, my God. I just got nervous. Sir, you don't need to speak to anybody at this point. But you need to make sure you get that money to where it's supposed to go. And you don't get to blame anybody. This gentleman has $1.8 billion that the whole state didn't know. And it showed up.
And you know what? In a certain timeline, we still wouldn't know about it. So
and he
what
keeps
happened
his job.
Was last year, there was a double reporting of about $3 billion in the state budget. It was an accounting error. And we were accounting twice as much money than we actually had. And the Comptroller General, Richard Ekstrom, was brought before hearings, and then he ended up resigning.
Mm-hmm.
So then a replacement comptroller came in, temporary one, because the comptroller is actually an elected position.
Yeah.
But because we're in the middle of an election cycle, they put in a temporary one. This gentleman comes in. He's looking at the books. He's like, well, okay, you thought that was bad. Over here, I found this bank account with $1.8 billion in it. And there's no record of it. We don't know where that money came from. We don't know what it's for. And you can't spend it unless you know what it's for. You can't. So he brought it to the attention of the Senate Finance Committee. The Senate Finance Committee says, well, that's the responsibility of the treasurer to know where your money is and what it's used for. And then Curtis Loftus is now just defensive.
Yeah,
he's throwing accusations. Here is a quote from Loftus on his Facebook page recently. He says, the Senate wants to remove your elected state treasurer. By the way, the dude was running unopposed, essentially. I mean, there's a third party, Workers Party candidate that ran against him, but she didn't get any votes. So he was essentially unopposed. No Democrat ran against him. The Senate wants to remove your elected state treasurer and replace him with a puppet. Last night, we invested $50 billion of your money, and the Senate wants total control of it. Their goal is to take control of your money for the remainder of my term, almost 3 years. They will hire their special interest friends as investment managers, consultants, bankers, and the like. The skullduggery is unlimited when you serve special interests and not the people. The treasurer must be a statewide elected official, not a puppet of the legislative branch. It is unfortunate to see a handful of state senators more interested in character assassination than solving problems that affect our state. Fortunately, most state leaders realize that the problems are usually best solved at a conference table, not by grandstanding in front of TV cameras.
Child, that's not grandstanding, sir. You got $1.8 billion. I don't understand what he doesn't understand.
I don't trust anybody who uses the word skullduggery.
I ignored it. I ignored it so easy. It was almost like he didn't even say it.
Isn't that the kind of an evil villain mustache twirling, you know, uses that word skullduggery? Yes.
Skullduggery.
It just doesn't sit right. And I'm thinking, who is in control of the Senate right now? Which party?
It's the Republicans.
Exactly.
And they're the ones coming out most forcefully
exactly.
against
them. And he is going in saying, your treasurer. Well, your treasurer, folks, lost $1.8 billion and he don't know where it's at.
So his own Facebook page, because I captured it before, it used to say the following in the intro. His Facebook page quote was, "If you're fed up with the woke tyranny, follow this page. I believe in freedom, not oppression." Now it's changed and it says, "It is your money. You should have a say how it is spent. You must vote and let your desires be heard."
But let me tell you this. I'm going to give y'all something that's free of charge. I'm going to give it to you free. Now, this come from my grandma. And if it came from her, it came from her mama, right? And it's a saying that most Southerners going to recognize. And it's a hit dog will holler. Translation of that is when we get to talking about it, if you get to throwing your hands and throwing insight on somebody else and pointing fingers somewhere else, typically it's you. You the problem. And in this case, the hit dog has hollered, and that hit dog know exactly where that money came from. And everybody else over there who's acting like they don't know too. You don't just grow an account of $1.8 billion. It came from somewhere, and there is a trace for it. And what people are going to have to do is demand that that money be found.
Well, the $1.8 billion is only half of the scandal, believe it or not. There's another half you may not be aware of.
What's that?
We'll watch this video clip where first McMaster defends Curtis Loftus. But then we get into the other thing where McMaster had to intervene on Loftus's behalf before Loftus almost ruined things for everybody.
Ooh,
watch this.
Click play.
Henry McMaster says he still has confidence in the ability of South Carolina's elected treasurer to control the state's money. The governor's assertion comes despite a scathing report released yesterday that puts blame on Treasurer Curtis Loftus for a $1.8 billion debacle. State House reporter Mary Green has those details.
A group of senators revealed Tuesday that days after a contentious hearing with Treasurer Curtis Loftus, Loftus threatened to release sensitive information about the state's finances online. Governor Henry McMaster had to get on the phone to try to stop him. And here's how he described their conversation Wednesday.
It would be dangerous to do that, and I wish he wouldn't do it.
Ultimately, Loftus didn't, but the governor, attorney general, and chief of SLED all had to interfere to stop such a catastrophic action. Yet McMaster said Wednesday he still has confidence in Loftus.
What gives you faith or confidence that the treasurer isn't going to threaten this another time?
I think as long as we all work together, communicate, collaborate, cooperate, and work for the people, and quit fighting among ourselves, I think we'll be just fine.
For months, a Senate subcommittee has been investigating nearly $2 billion in taxpayer money with no known owner, and which lawmakers didn't know about until last fall. In a report it released Tuesday, the group firmly blames Loftus for this discrepancy, but stopped short of calling for his removal from office at the governor's request.
Had the governor not asked you all to hold off on recommending his removal, would that have been in the recommendations today?
Yes. We would have recommended he be removed from office.
But the main thing is not to, at this point, is not to point blame or try to find error, but find out the answers about the money. Where is it? Where is it supposed to go? Or did any of it get the way it was supposed to go? What's it supposed to be used for? And if it's really there.
Last week, the governor formed a multi-agency task force that includes both the treasurer and the comptroller general, at whom the treasurer has assigned much of the blame. McMaster has charged them with determining where this money came from by July 1st.
We have to get those answers, otherwise the public will lose complete faith in this system.
And asked the governor what happens if that task force fails to meet the July 1st deadline he set to determine where this money came from and who owns it. The governor told me he's confident they'll have those answers by then, but Senator Larry Grooms, the subcommittee's chair, told me he just doesn't believe that's feasible. Reporting from the State House, I'm Mary Green.
That was Live 5 News. And if you caught the other half, not only was $1.5 or $8 billion not known about, Curtis Loftus, he was going to publish a document that contained all of South Carolina's government's bank account numbers, the current balances, and other identifying information that would have let hackers and cyber criminals get access to state money. And that's why SLED had to intervene, cybercrime experts intervene. Henry McMaster was only hours out of his own knee surgery, and he was coming out of his anesthesia and had to call Loftus and say, don't publish that stuff.
You could have went with that one.
And yet, he says, well, no, we're not here to put blame. What the hell was that?
Listen, and here's how I'm going to say. I think somebody knows or has an idea. Ain't too much that go on down there that they don't have an idea of where it is, where it came from, who's behind it. They know that. That conference table that Loftus said deals is best being made at this conference table, right there is where the information has been passed on what's going on with that $1.8 billion. And for them to say, let's not point fingers. We point fingers as a state at everything else.
Mm-hmm.
We point fingers at individual choices that only impact households.
Loftus is blaming the left, radicals, and Marxists.
See? See,
right?
we
I don't see
fingers.
Him bringing them to the table.
He not. But now he pointing fingers. But you don't want us to say that the man, and this was his job responsibilities, he did not fulfill them?
Why would you bring to the table somebody who didn't know where this money was to begin with? What further information are you going to get out of this
character? To help find the money. Where is it, like a forensic accountant? Where are they? Bring them in, a third party, it's to like, go back and check from the beginning and watch the balances.
It's like
You'll find it.
It's like bringing OJ in to help find the killer.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Black, White, and Blue in the South. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. Jamila's so depressed she won't be back next week. She's already scheduled another knee surgery with her doctor so she can reestablish herself. Please take a quick minute and leave us a rating and a review of our show. If you do, it will keep squatters out of your properties like repellent.
Yep.
If you are a blue dot in a red sea, keep the faith, keep up the hard work. Change only happens over many years of work and dedication. As President John F. Kennedy once said, we are not afraid to entrust the American people with unpleasant facts, foreign ideas, alien philosophies, and competitive values. For a nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people.
Yes.
So let's ditch the fear and be not afraid and speak up on what you believe ails our country.
Woohoo! I like that. I like that. The end.
The preceding podcast is a product of Big Media and copyright 2024, all rights reserved.